into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. The Paddy Power Half Hour on OTB Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now you're very welcome along to the Paddy Power Half Hour. Every Friday here in Off the Ball at around about 1:30, as close as we can get it, we look ahead to all the biggest games of the weekend and tell you what to watch and why, and hopefully we can navigate our way through the betting markets as well. Joining us this week is statsman and odds compiler from Paddy Power, Emmett O'Keefe. Emmett, how are you getting on?
Not too bad, Enda. Looking forward to a weekend of sun and a football weekend free of any Ireland angst.
Sun or snow, depending on what weather you're looking at. And from his YouTube layer is Ger Gilroy. How are you getting on?
Very good. I mean, that joke would work if I had a YouTube channel, Enda, but you're on we go.
Well, you see, the problem is, Ger Gilroy, it's not as catchy as called. It doesn't have as much, you know, workarounds with names. So you need to work on that before you get an actual YouTube channel. Just to let you know, this is a Premier League show, but if you haven't heard, Leinster's clash with Toulon in the Heineken Champions Cup has been called off today. So we'll have more on that on the OTB Sports site as we have it. On the show, we do a near miss segment every week. So if you haven't seen what near miss is, every week we give you the chance to reclaim a losing bet stake. And in the last couple of weeks, give away 11 grand and 2.5 grand a couple of weeks. And it's called near miss because if you nearly win a bet on the Premier League, if you have a single bet or an accumulator on Paddy Power and it has been let down by a dodgy VAR decision or an offside, or it goes in off somebody's arse, then you can take a screenshot of it, send it to us, and our betting commission can look at it and see whether you deserve your bet refunded or if you deserve to get your full payout as well. To enter, you just screenshot it, as I said, send it to us on Twitter with the hashtag PPNearMiss or DM us on Instagram or send it to us on WhatsApp. 0879 180 180 is the number. Every Friday at the end of Paddy Power, we'll announce the winner and you can see all the TCs on otbsports.com and stay tuned to all our social channels for more. So let's run through the fixtures for this weekend. We do have a stacked week of Premier League fixtures. Chelsea against West Brom kick us off at 12:30 tomorrow. Leeds against Sheffield United, Leicester against Man City, and we finish off with a cracker of Arsenal against Liverpool at 8 o'clock on Saturday. Sunday is Southampton against Burnley, Newcastle take on Tottenham, Aston Villa against Fulham, and Man United against Brighton is the evening kickoff. And then Monday we have two games, Everton against Crystal Palace and Wolves against West Ham. The Paddy Power specials for the week, Emmett, we're looking at two this week. Chelsea to go unbeaten for the rest of the season in the Premier League. Obviously, Thomas Tuchel is still unbeaten as Chelsea manager. And an OG in the Arsenal-Liverpool game. What are the odds in those games?
Yeah, so we'll start with the on-goal one. The on-goal to be scored in Arsenal-Liverpool is 15-2 in what hopefully was traditionally a high-scoring fixture. And as you said, Arsenal had to rely on a couple of on-goals to get out of jail against West Ham. And then Chelsea, I think, yeah, it's interesting that Thomas Tuchel, they've gone unbeaten in his first 10 Premier League matches as manager, and I think he's probably making a lot of those English journalists, like maybe Henry Winter, who are kind of shedding crocodile tears for Frank Lampard. He's proven them wrong. I think there's been a huge change in Chelsea, and they're as short as 11-2 to go unbeaten in their last 9 matches of the 2021 Premier League season. And I don't think it's unrealistic that Tuchel could potentially walk away with the FA Cup and Champions League given Chelsea's Champions League draw.
Yeah, well, to do so in the Premier League, he'll have to get past the mighty West Brom this weekend. 12:30, that kicks off tomorrow. And we'll just run through the Instagram fixtures. Who thinks Chelsea is going to win this? A whopping 92% think Chelsea are going to win this, and I would be on their side as well. Ger, what do you think?
Well, okay, fair enough. I understand where everybody's coming from at West Brom. Big Sam, you wouldn't say he's been a success so far, but things have definitely tightened up at the back for him. In his first 8 Premier League games, they conceded 24 goals. In the last 8 games, they've conceded just 7, and just 2 conceded in the last 5 games. So he's obviously got his hands around the defence. Unfortunately, that hasn't been good news for Darragh O'Shea, who, by the way, was a baller. I think we can all agree that he is going to be a mainstay at the back for Ireland. A key player for us for the next decade, hopefully. I do want to talk about the other thing here that has been exercising me. What happens? What do you do with Timo Werner? I was just asking on Twitter today if anybody can remember anybody coming back from a scenario where you are as bad as Timo Werner has been. I looked at the miss during the week. It's like, this is somebody who literally could not kick snow off a rope at the moment. Mm. He would kick the rope and the snow would stay there. Or he would miss the rope or he would fall over and it would be like old comedy from the 1920s, a silent movie where it's like the color has somehow made this man incapable of doing the thing he was supposed to do. Nobody's come up with an example that they can show me where somebody has got back to the level that they should have been at. People are saying Fernando Torres, but he never recovers. That's the thing. Something like this can actually be an absolute killer for your career. So that's the most interesting thing about this. I think it's going to be a very low-scoring game. All the odds suggest that Chelsea aren't scoring goals. West Brom aren't conceding them. Back to 1-0, back to 2-0 if you want to. Back to under 2.5 goals. They're the only bets that I'd be making around this one. But I am very interested. Like it's like a car crash. You can't turn away from the Timo Werner horror show at the moment.
Yeah, the thing about Timo Werner, though, it is the old cliche of you don't become a bad footballer overnight. It seems to be a real confidence issue. I don't think you do, because Fernando Torres is a different example. You know, he did his knee in. He wasn't the same player as a player.
Andrew Shevchenko.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be surprised if Timo Werner doesn't get back to the player that he was. I mean, he's still a young lad, so obviously he has a long career ahead of him. I think he'll be fine.
At Chelsea. I don't think he's going to do it at Chelsea. I think he should get out of there, feel the sun on his back somewhere else. Mm. Anyway,
potentially.
Too much time at Chelsea.
Potentially. Emmett, obviously Tuchel, we touched on him there. He has been winning games, but not by a lot. The goals might be an interesting market in this because Chelsea haven't scored more than two goals under Tuchel so far. So what are your thoughts on this in terms of the betting markets?
Yeah, I think, yeah, unsurprisingly, Chelsea are 1-5, the draw 5-1, and West Brom 13-1. Yeah, I think Chelsea to win it, for all the reasons stated, at 8-11 should definitely worth including in all your weekend accumulators. In terms of what you must be more interesting bet, Timo Werner's German colleague Kai Havertz has started as the central striker in Chelsea's last two league matches and has gone close to scoring on both occasions. So 5-1 on him to score first looks somewhat appealing if the kind of if he's starting in that position again. Just quickly on Werner, I think, as you mentioned, I think like players like Torres, I think there were issues like losing their pace, potentially over the hill. I think Werner is still the right age. And also worth mentioning, he's hit the woodwork 5 times this season, I think, which is the second most in the league. So I think there's definitely some luck issues and bad management from Frank Lampard at play there.
Right, move on to
one of the legendary Kilkenny managers, or maybe it was Kevin Cashman, the legendary poor curling journalist, would say that you hit the crossbar, you hit the woodwork. That's a bad shot. You miss. You don't get a special super bonus point. Those scores don't count. That's not bad luck. It's a bad shot.
Mm. Well, he might give. We'll see. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt for the next couple of weeks anyway, until the end of the season. Let's move on to the 3 o'clock kickoff because that is Leeds against Sheffield United. Loads of people backing Leeds on our Instagram poll. Paul Heckingbottom takes on his old club, former Leeds manager, of course, and it is going to be it's going to be a tight enough one for him to pull off anything here. Sheffield United have only won 2 games away from home this year. That is Bristol City and Manchester United, surprisingly enough. And I can't see them getting anything from this game. Leeds are in pretty good form, and they also don't have a lot of injuries. A lot of their players got a bit of a rest over the international period as well, which was probably badly needed for them. And I do think this is probably going to be an easy enough one for Leeds. Sheffield United, they're already relegated at this stage. There's probably no point in playing this game. I think this is going to be a high-scoring win for Leeds. Emmett, what are the markets saying on this?
Yeah, echo your sentiments there, Enda. So Leeds are 1-2, the draw 16-5, and Sheffield United are 5-1. It's hard to see past Leeds, even though I think Sheffield United did kind of put up a spirited performance in the cup quarter final against Chelsea before the international break. I think match prices look fair here, so no bet to recommend. But one thing I think worth noting is just how good Patrick Bamford's statistics are. Only Son Heung-min, Harry Kane and Bruno Fernandes have more combined goals and assists than him this season. And when he doesn't have the ball, Bamford's work rate is absolutely superb as the leader of Leeds press. I think Bamford narrowly missed out in the England squad over the international break, but I think he's unfortunate just that England's options and attackers are of such a high quality. If you look in the last decade, players like Danny Welbeck, Ricky Lambert and Andy Carroll have gone to major tournaments for England. I think Bamford is playing at a level that's significantly above what those players could reach.
Yeah, yeah, but they've got Harry Kane, and you know he's a exactly. Harry Kane's a very clever striker, is how you describe Harry Kane. Let's move on to the half five, because I don't think there's much point spending too much time on Leeds Sheffield United, because half five on Saturday is Leicester taking on Man City. Brendan Rodgers going up against Pep Guardiola. 69% think that Man City will come away with the win here. Jared, this is not an easy one for Man City by any stretch of the imagination. Leicester are on really good form. They've gotten over the hurdle of winning important games like they did against Manchester United in the FA Cup. And even though Man City have been in good form, there is potential to beat them there. And Manchester United, the aforementioned Manchester United, have proven that. So do you reckon that Brendan Rodgers can pull off a big result here and maybe narrow the gap a little bit?
You do love yourself some Brendan Rodgers top quality football in those big games where he proves what a great manager he is and how much Celtic have really missed having him over the years. What happened the last time Leicester and Manchester City played? I mean, I think that they've already done everybody a little bit of a service this season, and there's been an opportunity for us to see just how amazing Leicester can be in these big games. The one thing I would say about this, if you're interested in getting involved financially, wait until teams are named, because there is strong speculation that Manchester City are going to name a team with Tuesday night game against Dortmund in mind. So it doesn't seem like he is the type of manager who wants to bet in a team and partnerships in advance of that game, which I think is a little bit different from the Liverpool one. I'll talk about that a little bit later. I wouldn't be terribly surprised if he rested some players, for example, or if he played some of the players who weren't away on international duty. So I think that there's I certainly wouldn't be putting anything down right now. I think you're right, Enda. There is room for Leicester to win this game, but I also would like to see what Manchester City team is named for this Saturday half-five kickoff.
Yeah, Pep hasn't been adverse to making big calls for big games, and sometimes he even sacks himself out for those Champions League games. One player that we might see on the pitch, though, is Sergio Aguero, and it has been announced last week that Sergio Aguero will leave the club at the end of the year. Is I would have him as the best player off the Premier League era in terms of 2010 to 2020. Is he up there? Am I crazy to think that he's the best player that's played in that period?
So who else is in that conversation?
Well, you're thinking Van Dijk is definitely in there in terms of quality, but he was playing for Southampton for a large chunk of it. And then Kevin Hazard. De Bruyne as well. Hazard is in there for sure. But I just think consistently over the course of his career for Man City, he's won multiple doubles. He's been top goal scorer multiple times. And I know he hasn't gotten into many player team of the year, but he is the best player that has played in the last 10 years in the Premier League.
Better than Harry Kane?
Yes.
Definitely.
Well, Harry Kane hasn't won anything.
But said Virgil van Dijk's time at Southampton counts for this for some reason.
No, I said that's actually a downfall for Virgil van Dijk, because he wasn't playing for... But van Dijk has won a Champions League and a Premier League for Liverpool. He transformed that team. Kevin De Bruyne, obviously a key member of this squad as well. But Sergio Aguero...
Tell me what would Harry Kane have done if he'd been playing for Man City? How many goals would he have scored?
But he wasn't.
No, but that's not the point. You're saying he's the best player on the pitch.
We'll make an argument for Harry Kane then.
I think it comes down to what you like, and I think Aguero's got the consistency. He's the best kind of goals to minutes ratio in Premier League history, but I don't think he scaled the peaks that we've seen from Harry Kane this season, with the kind of goals and assist numbers, some of the seasons De Bruyne has put up. And I think it's consistency versus peak, and kind of what you value in terms of performance there.
I think he gets super bonus points for longevity and the fact that he's still... I'm really interested to see what happens next. Rivaldo's speculating today that he could end up at Barcelona and that he will end up playing with Leo Messi as opposed to actually being shipped out in preparation for the arrival of Leo Messi. So I don't know. And it'll be very interesting to see if he stays in the Premier League, who might be interested in signing him, because obviously, could he do a welcome to Manchester situation? Is there a possibility that he might flip it and decide, actually, you know, I don't want that statue outside. I want to come here and slash you down.
I don't think he's that type of player. He's not a Carlos Tevez, but I watched a 9-minute long video of Lionel Messi's assists on Twitter this morning. And it's no wonder that Luis Suarez had such a peak at the latter stages of his career, because he was getting them put up to him on a silver platter. And Sergio Aguero, best friends with Lionel Messi, might want that as well for the end of his career. But depends on the Erling Haaland situation as well. Let's move on to the late kickoff, the very, very late kickoff on Saturday, which is Arsenal against Liverpool. Arsenal, the mid-table Arsenal, are not favourites with our Instagram polls. It's 29% Arsenal, 71% Liverpool, despite Liverpool's shaky form over the last couple of weeks. They've gotten back to winning ways, and that is largely down to the fact that their injury list is just not as long as it once was. Virgil van Dijk and Joe Gomez, only really the two that's ruled out to the rest of the season. Jordan Henderson may be coming back sooner than later, and they're getting back to winning ways. One thing to look out for in this game is goals, because in this game, over the last 32 games between them, an average of 3.52 goals against with these two opponents. So you're looking for goals, you're looking for Liverpool looking ahead to the Champions League. Arsenal, obviously a mid-table side at this point, this should be an easy one for Liverpool.
Oh, I don't know about that. What are the odds telling us?
Yeah, so Arsenal are 21-10, the draw is 5-2, and Liverpool are 6-5. My inclination here would actually have been to fancy Arsenal here. I think they've actually been playing quite well lately. But I think that the issue kind of facing them is both Bukayo Saka and Emile Smith Rowe face late fitness tests. Since Arteta kind of changed formation on Stephen's Day and introduced Smith Rowe, I think Arsenal's season has really turned around. And Saka, I think, has been one of the best young players in the league in the last couple of months. I think those players well could expose Liverpool's obvious weakness, which is the kind of runs in behind the high line of and Ozan Kabak and Nat Phillips both lacking pace. On the positive side for Arsenal, though, I think Martin Odegaard is not going to be one of these championship manager cult heroes like Freddie Adu or Cherno Samba, who flames out as a professional. Odegaard was absolutely superb against, and it was the catalyst for Arsenal's comeback against West Ham. In terms of bet here, though, I like go back to a bet that served us well a couple of months ago, with Thiago to be carded at 11-4. Of all the players who played 10 or more matches in the Premier League, only Ashley Barnes has more fouls than Thiago, and his tackling style is possibly even more rash than Paul's goals, who he's often compared to.
Anything to add there, Ger?
Yeah, so Arteta says we can't have two faces. Arsenal are a bit like the man of many faces in Game of Thrones. I don't know what the truth is about them at the moment. So the 3-3 draw is a perfect example. Absolutely horrific for 40 minutes and then really, really good. But they're only really good after the opposition have already taken their foot off the gas a little bit and decided to ease off, and they're a little bit less physical because they're defensive. I don't know what the truth is with this team, and I couldn't be backing them at this stage. Maybe next season, if they finish this season really well and that was an actual turning point and those young players continue to progress and they do manage to sign Odegaard, he's making all the right noises about that, then I might stop thinking of them as flaky. But for now, flaky as. And I do, look, I don't think it's easy for Liverpool in this. I'm still a little bit suspicious of everything that's happened at this point. But the mini break is really important. This is a new season. There's just been like a 10-day period where the management team gets to go away and soak up all of the information, look at all the stats and the individual stuff, look at the positioning on the field, the average depth of position that Trent Alexander-Arnold has had versus last season, and kind of work on those things and try and particularly with Trent, who, bear in mind, has had like daily coaching because he wasn't away with England as well. So I think it is an opportunity for Liverpool to kickstart the rest of their season. I think they're still going to be going deep into the year. So there's potentially 8 weeks left of football, and this is the moment where Liverpool reemerge, I think, as the team that we know they are.
Yeah, Kieran Tierney was phenomenal for Scotland as well in the international break. So it'll be a nice little battle between him and Trent down that left/right side of the pitch. Moving on to the Sunday games then, Southampton against Burnley is the early kickoff, and people are just about favouring Southampton in this one. And I'm not too sure about that. Burnley were really good when they beat Everton, one of the goals of the season from Dwight McGill in that game as well. Southampton, again, very flaky, but did get back to winning ways in the FA Cup against Bournemouth. And, you know, Danny Ings, again, comes down to him, and he's a doubt for this game. Jer, what are your thoughts on this one?
I literally have no thoughts on this apart from the fact that Danny Ings is a doubt, and I would not be interested in getting involved in a financial way until I find out whether or not he's going to play. The Oriol Romeo is coming back. Smallbone is supposed to be fit. Michael Obafemi, remember him? He's supposed to be fit as well. So there's an opportunity for Southampton not to have the injury crisis be the thing that they blame. But again, it all comes down to whether or not Danny Ings is playing. And I think Burnley are probably going to be without Robbie Brady. So not that he's getting a start at the moment for them. But I don't know. Like, are both these teams now at the start of this last 5-6 weeks of their season going, this is grand, we're finished, we may as well be on holidays?
Potentially. Well, what is interesting about Burnley is in that game against Everton, they were extremely expansive and really good. So you know this team has it in it if push comes to shove. So I actually do fancy Burnley. They're very good away from home as well. They have a better record away from home than they do at home this year. And against Southampton, who aren't really that all that unbeatable at St Mary's, I do think that Burnley have a chance to win this. Emmett, what are the markets then?
Yeah, so Southampton are 21-20, the draw 9-4, and Burnley 11-4. Yeah, I'd echo everything Jared said there. It's hard to get involved in. It's hard to think of a bet on this game when I think both Danny Ings and James Ward-Prowse are out. I think if both of those were fit, I would fancy Southampton at the price. I think they are a little bit better than the results have shown. And actually, Kyle Walker-Peters coming back has been pretty significant for them. He like a bit like Kieran Tierney for Arsenal. He's a huge attacking weapon for Southampton. So if the Southampton have a first choice teammate, I would fancy them.
Steve Bruce is not a man who I don't know how he has managed to keep his job this long. If Newcastle had any sort of funding at all, surely he'd be gone at this point. He takes on Jose Mourinho at 2:05 on Sunday. And just listen to this. So Spurs obviously massive favourites with their Instagram polls. 83% saying Tottenham are going to win, 17% saying Newcastle are going to win. The Athletic did a survey during the week, and it was quite startling, and it shows you that the Newcastle fans are just not happy with what's happening this year. So they asked, do you believe your club is being run well? That is to all the fans. Newcastle fans were dead last on 23%. Happy with the manager to take the club into the next year? Newcastle dead last on 25%. And happy with the club's performance this year? Newcastle dead last on 27%. So the Newcastle fans clearly have no confidence in this management team or in the ownership. And you know, Tottenham were actually quite low on that as well, to be fair. And again, I just can't see it. I can't see where Newcastle are going to get the wins. It was like Fulham earlier on this year when I was betting against them every single week. I just cannot see where Newcastle are going to get the win against Tottenham this weekend.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. The price here are Newcastle 9-2, the draw 14-5, and Tottenham 8-13. I think the only hope Newcastle have is Callum Wilson and Alan Saint-Maximin coming back from injury. Both are back in training, but I think this game might come too soon for them. And if they're both absent, I think their options attack are incredibly weak. Joe Linton at this point probably has to go down as one of the worst signings of the Premier League in recent years, given he cost in the region of £40 million. I think Spurs look a reasonable proposition, even -1 on the handicap at around 7-4. Even without Son Heung-min, they should have far too much quality in attack, with Kane, Lucas Moura playing well recently, and Carlos Vinicius actually looking reasonably decent as well. Also,
another relegation candidate is playing at 4:30 on Sunday, and they're playing against your Aston Villa. Fulham won 3 games in the last 25 in the Premier League. This surely must be a must-win for Aston Villa at this stage.
I'm not sure about must-win. From Fulham, must win this game if they're going to. I mean, they're going to catch Newcastle at some point, right? That's the thing. This is like one of the worst slow bicycle races that you've ever seen in terms of who's actually going to go down. If you look at the bottom of the table, Newcastle have 28 points and Fulham have 26. So Fulham could potentially draw their way to safety. I don't know. I mean, this could be one of those games, right? So Jack Grealish back in training, that was the picture that did the rounds on all of the Villa fan sites and on all the Villa accounts. And it was like, oh, wow, finally, something to look forward to for the rest of the year, because they've literally been abysmal since he left. I mean, John McGinn's overhead bicycle kick, you're like, well, could do a little bit of that for us. Could you just ping one in for us there? Because he was brilliant for the early part of the season when everything about Villa was brilliant. And they've completely gone off the boil. I think this is the bang of a team that has 40 points that were unexpectedly good. They are absolutely now resting on their laurels for a period of time. So Grealish back, that gives me some confidence that Villa might score. I was thinking about this game, and then I was like, oh, Fulham aren't going to score here. So it could be nil all, or if Jack Grealish is involved, he might create a chance and score. And then I forgot, the world's greatest footballer of the last 10 days, Mitrovic, is playing for Fulham. Everything he touched turned to goals. It was like, every time I check live scores, like Mitrovic. What? So I don't know what's going to happen, but if there is a goal for Fulham, it's going to be Mitrovic, and that might be worth a little nibble. Anytime goal scorer, Mitrovic. Best player in world football week.
Yeah, well, he always has this in him, though. When he's playing at a certain standard, Mitrovic is a very good striker. Emmett, in terms of the markets here, does Jack Grealish coming back have that much of an impact on Aston Villa, or how does that affect the pricing?
hugely. I think so. Currently, the match prices are 6-5, Villa 11-5 the draw, and Fulham 23-10. I think, yeah, I think the market is probably assuming, I think probably Grealish probably a 60% chance of starting. But I think if Grealish is announced to start, we should see Villa go off rent or an even money, maybe even slightly shorter. As I mentioned, I think on a previous podcast, Villa before Grealish was injured were averaging 5.5 shots on target per game. Since he's been absent, they're averaging around 3.5 shots on target per game. So that kind of shows you what Villa have been missing.
Yeah, and absolutely, like, he's a key player, probably one of the players of the season if he can stay fit. Now moving on to the 7:30 kickoff, it is my first favourite side, Manchester United, taking on my second favourite side, Brighton Hove Albion, and it's 85% Manchester United. I'm not so sure about that. Manchester United have been in poor enough form, they haven't been playing great, and Brighton, you know, they're straight off a massive win over Newcastle a couple of weeks ago. But one bonus for Manchester United is Rashford did not play for England. He was called into the squad, but he didn't play. And Bruno Fernandes got a much-needed rest against Luxembourg as well during the week. So they finally got a little bit of downtime to themselves to see if they can get their legs back. And I do think that maybe Rashford might be worth a little nibble on this if he is starting, if he's fit, because he has been pretty poor, but I would say down to the fact that he's carrying injuries, he's really tired, he's playing all the minutes, and he just needed a rest. So I'm torn on this. I do think that Brighton will score, but I do think the Manchester United probably have too much firepower. They got lucky against Brighton last time out, but I think they're good enough to get a win at home against Brighton, who are still relegation battlers. Emmett, what are the odds here?
Yeah, so Man United 8-13, the draw 14-5, and Brighton 4-1. Yeah, just it could be a good opportunity for Brighton if Rashford, Greenwood, and Martial are all absentees. But this reeks of a game, kind of a typical Brighton game where Brighton dominate possession, have the better chances, win an expected goals. But United kind of nick a 2-1 win somehow through a couple of moments of magic from Fernandes or Pogba. In terms of bet here, I think worth waiting for teams here. But Daniel James, I'd say worth a look at the goal score markets around 16-5 score anytime. He's actually been, I thought he was a player who was destined for the lower reaches of the Premier League, but he's making a believer out of me, and he was superb for Wales over the international break also. So that might be worth a look.
Let's move on to the Monday games then. And Jer, Everton against Crystal Palace. You don't like Roy Hodgson. You don't think Roy Hodgson is going to be the Crystal Palace manager next year?
No, I don't think so. I think the quality of football that Crystal Palace, the owner and the fans, have been forced to watch over the last, really since Christmas, has been fairly abysmal. The record is terrible. Now, you've been blaming injuries and stuff, and there have been some signs of form coming back to the team in patches over the last few weeks. But I just, like, really, why would you persist? The Premier League is this unbelievably exciting league where you have the opportunity to sign players from all around the world, and you can play progressive football. You could get one of that new wave of young German managers to come in to play heavy metal football and to be the next best super club manager. But instead, you've gone for Roy Hodgson again, trying to draw his way to mid-table mediocrity. And there's no point in that. Like, that Danny Blanchflower quote that John Duggan's so fond of is not about winning or losing. The game is about glory first and only. And it's like, come on. And I really hope Everton just thrash them in this game. But I have no confidence in Everton's form. There's been so many times where foolishly I'm like, I can see exactly that Ancelotti has kind of built this spine of the team. It's going to be consistent. They'll get chances and they'll score those chances and they'll kick on to that level where you can trust them. And it hasn't happened. So I don't trust Everton. And really, the fact that this game is on Monday evening early, that tells you a lot.
Mm. Funny enough, on that Athletic survey they did, Everton fans were the most happy with the manager. And I do think they're lucky to have Carlo Ancelotti as their manager, because he's clearly building something there that may not be in its fully form this year, but they do look dangerous. Crystal Palace are interesting. I think they'll go down next year if they sack Roy Hodgson, even though they've got really good players. But I do think they've been hanging on just because of how hard they are to beat. And I reckon that once Roy Hodgson leaves that club, they will go down immediately. Emmett, what are the odds saying for this? Crystal Palace, obviously hard to score against, so does that affect it?
Yeah, so we're expecting a low scoring game here. Everton 4-5, the draw 12-5, and Palace just under 4-1. As has been previously mentioned, Everton are hard to fancy, and look like they're going to be missing Abdoulaye Doucouré and Ben Godfrey here. I think Ben Godfrey being absent would be pretty significant. Godfrey is very quick at letting centre half, and that's pretty important if you're facing a team with Wilfred Zaha on attack. So if Godfrey is absent, I think pretty Zaha worth a look in the goal score markets around 11-4. Quietly, Zaha's having the best goals per game ratio of his career, and he was playing superb football until his recent injury.
Yeah, Zaha is definitely a player that's far too good for Crystal Palace, and he probably will eventually get that move away if he has the discipline to do so. Let's finish off then with the 8:15 kickoff on Monday night, which is Wolves against West Ham. Some people favouring West Ham, and it's 61% saying West Ham, 39% saying Wolves. And I do think that's fair enough, because West Ham, albeit their 3-3 draw with Arsenal when they were last out, they were 3-0 up at one point and absolutely flying. They are so dangerous on the counter-attack now with that little trio of Mikel Antonio and Lingard and then Suchek from the corners and Soufal bombing it up the right wing like a young Zabaleta. West Ham have a really good squad and they're really good to watch, and it's surprising that David Moyes has managed to evolve his play to have the same characteristics and fundamentals as previous David Moyes sides, but have that exciting and cutting edge as well. West Ham are a really dangerous side, and Wolves, who are not as good defensively as they were last year, are not scoring as many goals as well. So I think Wolves will actually struggle in this game. I think West Ham are going.
Who is your manager of the year, Ender?
Manager of the year so far, it's probably. I mean, it's an argument between David Moyes and probably Pep, isn't it?
Okay, so David Moyes. His West Ham side have 49 points, and Leicester City are on 56 points.
Leicester City came from a position of fifth on the last game of the season. West Ham came from relegation last season, more or less, to this.
Oh, look, you're right.
I like to see David Moyes doing well as well. Emmett, Monday night games, do they change? Does that affect it depending on what day it is, or is it just regardless of the day, it's all down to the game?
Yeah, generally just all down to the game. I guess the only things that really affect the price is just the amount of rest that the teams have between games. The price here would be Wolves 15-8, the draw 2-1, and West Ham 6-4. Yeah, I, in terms of manager of the year, I would probably lean towards Moyes, just because this is very much a low budget operation. It's like one of these movies like the Blair Witch Project that's made for small money and grosses a huge amount at the box office. The money they paid for Soufal, Suchek, the play he's getting out of the likes of Jesse Lingard, Mikel Antonio, like Moyes done an absolutely incredible job here. But I just hope he doesn't get too kind of pessimistic and settle for kind of the European places. I think Wolves are there for the taking.
Yeah, I heard. Was it Mark Lawrenson was saying, he revealed on a Saturday show that David Moyes said that he doesn't want Europa League football, as Champions League are bust. If they get Europa League football, is too much of a slog next year to contain with the squad that he has. So that was quite interesting.
Do you know what the Blair Witch Project is, Enda?
I haven't seen it, no.
Do you know what it is?
No.
It might actually literally be before your time. At least Emmett has a bit of culture. He's has seen things from before his time too. I just want to point out that this international break is really, it is one of those, there's almost a mini season coming now. So I would just caution people not to assume that the amount of points that teams have picked up now is going to, that they're going to continue to pick up points at the same rate. I think that if you had a mini table, if everybody went to 0 points right now for the rest of the year, you're going to see teams go on a streak. So if you can catch one of those teams who was on a streak, either a good streak or a bad streak, and do what Enda did at the start of the season when he was betting against Fulham, that's the type of thing that you should be looking for over the next 5-6 weeks, because some teams are in tailspins and some teams have their dander up. Mm. And you can't tell which of them is. Like if for example, in this game, West Ham, if West Ham come out of the blocks and play as well as they did in this game as they were before the international break, then that's a sign that they've managed this little break in confidence, momentum, if you believe in that, over the last while. And so I think a lot of managers are in their corn and a lot of managers get found out over the next few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Alex Ferguson always wanted to peak for the final 10 games. It was vitally important to winning the league title. I should tell you before we finish up that we will actually have commentary of those games. If you'd rather watch Newcastle, or if you rather listen to Newcastle against Spurs, which I would imagine it's going to be more entertaining listening to Nathan Murphy and Kenny Cunningham talk about that game as opposed to actually watching that game. So that's live commentary on Sunday, 2:05 Premier League, Newcastle against Spurs, Nathan Murphy and Kenny Cunningham. And then the 4:30 Aston Villa against Fulham is Stephen Doyle and Vinnie Perth as well. Vinnie Perth, really good with his analysis during the week on Ireland as well, if you want to check that out on the Off the Ball YouTube channel. That's us done for this week's Paddy Power Half Hour. We'll be back again at the same time, half one or around about it, as close as we can get to it, next week with our Premier League preview. Bet responsibly and enjoy the weekend.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on OTB Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.